Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chris Front Podcast. I'm your host, Maya. Today's a really fun one. The last recording I'm doing before heading back out on tour. Today with me, Harley Doherty. So excited to have you here, Harley. You are doing so much cool work. You're about to head out on tour as well. But yeah, please take it away. Introduce yourself and yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome getting to be a part of the podcast. You did a great introduction. Thank you so much. But yeah, my name's Holly Doherty. I'm 24. And yeah, I work in the live music industry. Very fortunate to do so. I have been full-time freelance for about a year. And then in the past couple of months, made the decision to go limited, so set up my own touring company, which is called Postcard Touring. And yeah, 2023 looks really great. Booked and busy, like you say, just about to head out on a tour in a couple of days, actually, which is super exciting. But yeah, super excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me, and yeah, really looking forward to chatting with you.
Incredible. Yeah, also congrats on getting that company set up officially. Yeah, I don't currently live in the UK, and I'm really jealous of your ability to set up a limited in the UK without actually having to put like significant money into it at all.
Sure.
That's so amazing. And yeah, limited companies are the best, and especially the legal protection they give. Anyways.
Definitely agree.
Just, yeah, it's really important to separate like private and business money and be held accountable only to like business money, so that's great.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyways, Harley, let's do a little icebreaker question. How did you get started in music? Yeah,
how did I get started in music? I was about 17 at the time. I'm from Nottingham originally in the UK, so I was 17 in Nottingham, currently at college. At that time, I was very kind of set on being an actor. I was super obsessed with theatre and like very much immersed in the acting world. And a friend of mine in my class, she was going to this show at a venue called Rescue Rooms in Nottingham to see these bands. And I was like, oh, cool, you know, I'll come along. Sounds fun. I didn't really know the bands. They were just kind of local bands, but I just thought, oh, it'll be cool to hang out with some friends, like see some music. So we went to this show, and I think she got guest list or something through one of the bands that she knew, because she was very much into journalism and like wrote for the local newspaper. So I think she was doing some sort of review on the show. And they'd like forgot to put us on the guest list or something. So she had to call one of the band members to come out and meet us and clear it with the promoter. And through that, I met the promoters for the show. And kind of realized at that time, like everything just kind of clicked for me. I was like, oh, you know, you put on music and that's your job. Like you get paid for that. And they were like, yeah. And they were super lovely, like kind of talked to me about it. And I was like, this is really interesting. Like I kind of didn't realize, it sounds really naive, but I didn't realize at that time that you could work in music if you weren't a musician or a singer. Like there wasn't really any space for anything else. And I got chatting to the promoters. I was like, this is super interesting. You know, can I come and shadow you guys? I'd love to learn more about this. And they very kindly took me under their wing, let me kind of shadow them at some shows. I helped with like various bits and bobs around Nottingham, and then they let me put on my own shows. So I kind of got into it that way. And then from there, just kind of did more volunteering. I turned 18. So then I could do stuff at festivals and bigger shows, like officially. And it was at kind of that point where I realized I'd kind of lost the love for acting and theater. And I'd very much found the love for music. And especially because I could now see there was a space for me in that kind of industry, like not as a, I can't play an instrument, very sadly, and I only sing in the shower sometimes. so it was exciting for me to be like, oh, okay, like I can have a career in this industry. Like that's super exciting, and I don't have to be, you know, on the stage and super famous or whatever. I can just be behind the scenes doing my thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, from then on, I went to university. I studied music business. I worked in various sectors of the music business for a while, and then eventually left to pursue live full time, and have been touring ever since. So, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting path. I feel like there's a lot of sort of entrepreneurial instinct for the, you know, lack of a better term, to sort of randomly be at a show and then immediately go and seek out promoters, or, you know, like talk to the people and be like, can I shadow you? I feel like even that step to just talk to people directly, I feel like is something that genuinely requires a lot of courage when you don't have a clue what's happening there. Do you know what I mean? Like you're new to something, and particularly when you're that young, you know, and quite frankly, you know, a marginalized person, I think that is really really courageous step, but you know, clearly the best thing you could have done, and it's cool that you pretty much got there sort of by yourself, versus I feel like, and there's nothing wrong with that, but like most other people take years and years and years to even get to the point of asking.
Yeah,
you know, and for sure. I'm sure you see the very same posts in like the usual suspect Facebook groups, you know, where there's you know, loads of young people being like, I want to shadow people, where can I shadow people, and stuff like that, and you know, oftentimes these people are a lot older than 17 years and have taken years and years and years to even get to the point of, you know, defining that is something that they want and sort of going after. And I think that's something that I don't know, I just like that about your story, that you just went for it.
Thanks.
You know,
I always feel like I feel like at that point I was probably quite a confident individual because of the acting. I always felt like, you know, acting super competitive, you kind of have to put yourself out there, you have to talk to people, otherwise you're not going to get anywhere. And you know, I still have insecurities. I'm not like the most confident person ever, but I do think that I agree it takes a lot to be able to go up to someone and ask that kind of thing. But I also always try and tell people that, you know, at the end of the day, if you want to ask and put yourself out there, the worst thing that person can possibly say to you is, no, I'm really sorry, I can't facilitate that. And you would be so surprised to see how often, like people have this perception that if you ask somebody for help, they will say no. But I've always found that 9 times out of 10, the answer is normally a yes. And if it's not like a enthusiastic yes, it's like a, oh, I would love to help you, but I can't right now. Here is this that can maybe help, or here, let me put you to this person. Or, you know, it's like a maybe not right now, but let's talk in the future, or talk to this person. Or, you know, it's very rare. To be fair, I can't really think of a time where I've had a straight up no for just asking for help on something. Like, it's very rare that somebody will give you a flat out no. And even if it's like a not exactly what you've asked for, it's normally a, I can't do this, but maybe I could do this for you, or I could introduce you to this person. It's like an alternative, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that is something I do appreciate about the music industry. I feel like people want to be helpful, and I appreciate that, you know, obviously there's, you know, lines and boundaries to everything and stuff, but yeah, like generally people enjoy helping other people. Like as a human, it feels great to do something for somebody else, because it makes you feel valuable and it makes you feel like you belong and it gives you a purpose. And that's a very core quality to being a human, and quite frankly, being content, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Totally agree.
Yeah. See, that's how deep we got in this podcast with just one question. Talking about easy. Human philosophy.
Love it.
Anyways, so let's talk about a typical day in the life for you, which, you know, likely will be on tour, or like, you know, at an event, managing, running arts liaison, whatever, like, but sort of the day looks pretty similar. But for somebody just getting started, and, you know, maybe somebody 17 looking to start to ask some questions, why don't you just, you know, take us through what your day, you know, will usually look like?
I guess it very much varies, because unlike people who have kind of 9-to-5 or regular jobs, my work is obviously quite varied. So at the moment, for example, like, I'm kind of gearing up to go on a tour. So I'm technically off at the moment, mm-hmm. but you're never really off. you're always kind of, I think that's the thing about being self-employed or having your own business. Like, yes, you decide your own hours to an extent, but everything you do is for your own benefit. So however much effort or work you want to put in, you tend to get that back out. So you can decide to work like 2 days a week and have the rest of the week off, but like the return of that probably isn't going to be as good as if you decided to work 5 days a week or seven, you know, it mm-hmm. kind of is swings and roundabouts. But yeah, right now I am kind of gearing up to go on tour. So that looks like a lot of planning, a lot of budgeting, organization, you know, sorting out rehearsals. You have to call the studio up. I have to book certain things. I have to book musicians, and just kind of communicating with the other bands and the other managers on tour. So everybody kind of knows who you are. Everybody knows what you need and what they need in return. And, you know, kind of what's going on with everything. There's a lot of moving parts to a tour normally. So it's, as a tour manager, you kind of have to have a bit of a, you don't have to know everything, but it's important that you kind of know a little bit about a lot. That's the best way for me to describe it. But yeah, so at the moment I'm kind of in those planning stages. We're in kind of like the final stages of planning before we head out on the tour. Our first show is on Sunday, so it's fast mm-hmm. approaching, just under a week.
Exciting.
Yeah. And then obviously when we're out on tour, there's show days most days. And mm-hmm. then we have a day off in the middle. So when I'm not in planning stages or off or researching and doing things for the business, then I'm normally out on the tour, kind of running the shows day to day, looking after the artists or working on, you know, whatever project that I'm kind of on at that time, I would say.
And I guess, what does that look like? I think it would be really interesting to hear for a listener, like, literally sort of you wake up at 9 a.m, whatever, like, sort of what do you do? Like, just sort of actually take us through sort of your day chronologically.
Yeah. Okay. So for me, again, like, because one of the weird things that I found about being in live is that I rarely would do like the same job twice. Mm-hmm. So when I was out with Pet Shop Boys, I was a production coordinator. But when I went out with Will Young, I was a tour assistant. And with mm-hmm. Maggie, I'm her tour manager. So it very much kind of varies role to role. But for example, like, Will Young is a great example. So we had a tour bus. So we would get to the venue. We would wake up early, kind of, I'd say around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, something like that. Not super early, mm-hmm. But early enough. I'm not much of a morning person. So anything like pre 10 a.m. is early for me. So we would wake up, you would get dressed. I'd have a bit of breakfast. We would go into the venue and we would look through the offices and the dressing rooms. And I would normally do that with our rep. And we would decide, you know, which room we wanted as the production office, which is where we sit and work for the day. We would decide, you know, how many rooms they had, who would have which dressing room, which one was the star dressing room, the band, if we had space for a crew room where everyone could kind of hang out, and just kind of go through and allocate the rooms. Once we'd found a room, we would set up everything for the day, our laptops, things like that. And then a big responsibility of mine on that tour in particular, because we didn't have a wardrobe person, I took care of the wardrobe things. So yes. That was super fun. So we had a case for wardrobe. So I would catch the cases from the trucks because they unload the trucks in the morning.
Yeah, the guys
and the rest of the crew, they work on the stage to make sure all of that's out and they start putting that up. For Pet Shop Boys, we had loads of production cases. So I would have caught all the production cases. We didn't actually have cases for Wu Young. We just had our own Pelly cases. So I would mainly catch the wardrobe case. I would go through it. I'd find our runner in the morning. I would normally send him out with the washing and the dry cleaning for the day. And that was like my main stress. I was like, please, please let there be a dry cleaners in this city. Because that was the main thing that needed to happen. Fancy clothes always need dry cleaning. And that is a...
Isn't the secret trick though, like just to take care of the immediate sort of stink after the show, to just use it? Like I heard from wardrobe assistants that they always carry like a cheap bottle of vodka because you can find it everywhere. It's dirt cheap and it works as a disinfectant perfectly. And so you pretty much just spray a little bit of that sort of on kind of like under the arms and stuff like that, and then that seems to be a main thing, and I love that.
You can tell, I learned that from our wardrobe guy on Pet Shop Boys. He was amazing. And yeah, I remember he asked for a bottle of vodka one time and I was like, oh, okay, sure. You know, you do you. but he was like, no, it's for the clothes. And I was like, oh, okay. And Febreze as well is kind of similar, but yeah, vodka, Febreze, if you're in a pinch, 100%. I definitely did a bit of hand washing on that tour. And the vodka is great, but also depends like how much physical activity the artists are doing on stage. Because for like, if the drummer, for example, is wearing a shirt, the drummer's very active and there's only so much that vodka can do. And, you know, it's important that they get to wear clean clothes every day, you know, just like we do, because they don't really have the same choice. They're trusting me to make sure that happens. So
exactly,
for sure. But, you know, I'm happy to do that. So that was like my main thing that I would do there. I would take care. We had catering on our tour, so I would kind of go around, make sure everybody was happy and knew where everything was in the day. I would do the menus.
Yeah, put up a bunch of signs probably.
Signage. I would do the menus for catering. So I would like ask the chefs what they were doing for the day. I'd kind of write it all up, make it all fancy schmancy, print it out, put it up in the catering rooms. And then more towards, I would kind of help the chefs sometimes stock the dressing rooms. And then as the show would go on, we would print set lists. We did a VIP experience with Wu Young. So I would go and kind of coordinate that with the rep as well. We'd bring the VIPs in. We would tick them off the list, hand out their packages. They would watch the sound check. And then we would kind of take them out. We would make sure everybody had eaten and was good and happy. We would do any guest list submissions, check that if there was any kind of special guests or anyone coming back to the dressing rooms or anything like that. And then the show would happen. And then we would pretty much, I would get all the clothes together. I would put them in the dressing rooms, obviously, once they came back from the washing. Sometimes I would steam them because shirts and stuff, sometimes when they wash them, they're not properly ironed. So I would always go over them with the steamer to make sure they were super fresh and clean, well pressed. And then, yeah, they would do the show. I would get all the things together, put them in the cases. And then they would start packing down the stage and we would start packing bits down and getting ready for the next day, putting everything on the trucks, again, making sure we had everybody on the buses before we left, having a shower, getting into comfies, and then putting my electric blanket on and getting into bed. Top tip, by the way, for winter touring. So good.
Important question here. When do you eat and when do you like, do you have any breaks in your day?
Oh, yes, definitely. Sorry, I definitely should have mentioned that. So it kind of depends on the flow of the day. Again, like tour to tour, it kind of depends, you know, what times you prefer to eat, like when you're actually hungry versus what time catering's available, I suppose. But typically on that tour, like I would come in and do all my stuff in the morning. Me and the rep would normally go for breakfast. It's super hard, by the way, to say no to a full English breakfast like that's available every day. Hash browns are my weakness.
Is there anything wrong with that?
No, absolutely not. They were so good. Yeah. Oh, amazing. So we would always go after we'd like kind of set everything up initially. And then from that, we would kind of go for lunch whenever we were sort of hungry and had done all the main bits in the day. Normally probably around like 1-2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then we would normally eat. The musicians would always go for dinner first. Not as a rule, just because they would do sound check and then eat after sound check. So they had some time before the actual performance. Mm-hmm. So the only real thing to bear in mind there is that depending on the size of the venue and the rooms, catering could be really busy at certain times.
Yeah.
So it was important to kind of make sure that you were going at a time that suited you, but that was also not when it was like peak time. And you know, certain people need to eat at certain times because of the way that their jobs are and their timings. Mm-hmm. Whereas I find that I have a little bit more flexibility in terms of like when I go to eat. But I don't think I was run off my feet to the point where I couldn't physically go into catering and sit and eat in catering. The odd time I might have taken away and sat at my laptop if I kind of needed to do something. But normally I think it's important to go and take the time to sit and eat just be, you know, with the food.
Yeah.
and chat with everyone, you know?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So definitely important. And then sometimes I would have a sandwich like after the show. My favorite is like a crisp sandwich. You know, you butter the bread and you put crisps and you just smash together. Oh, so good.
Very nice. I'm getting hungry listening to all of this.
Simple, but like so effective. I 10/10 would recommend.
Speaking of English breakfast, throughout last summer at some point, I realized that Tesco superstores have those cafes, and those cafes are getting well good with like vegan options and stuff.
Nice.
And then I realized that Tesco superstores now have a 3-4 pound full English vegan breakfast available.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Freshly made. And so
nice.
Just to throw that in there, if you're touring in the UK and you like to have your little veggie brekkie, Tesco Superstore is where you're going to go anyways, very likely. Or even smaller Tescos have it sometimes. So I cannot wait to be back in like a week. And the very first thing we're going to do is get my little Tesco breakfast.
Amazing.
And then I'm going to go get my little veggie sausage at Greg's.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to do all the things.
Yeah, of course.
you got to know your way around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have any, aside from what you already mentioned, but do you have any favorite snacks that you sort of grab at particular rest stops around different places or something?
That's a really good point. Do you know what? I'm super terrible for snacking throughout the day. I have to kind of control myself sometimes because it'll come to a meal time and I won't be super hungry. Mm. But then by the time that meal time has passed and we're like in between meals, then I'm like, I wish I could eat now, but I have to wait until dinner. Like if I've passed lunch or, you know, you kind of mess up your timings a little bit. But I have a sweet tooth. So I love, you know, the little packets of Haribos, like the mini Tanfastics or just anything sweet. I love just to eat sweets and crisps as well, like prawn cocktail crisps, smoky bacon crisps. Mm. They're my go-to.
Oh, hell yeah. But I guess, do you have any sort of specifics that you like to eat, particularly in like other specific countries or something? Like, do you have a favorite gym and snack or something like that?
My favorite, actually, when we went to Italy with Pet Shop Boys, one of our backline techs, she's amazing. She is Italian and she introduced me to Fonzie's.
Oh.
They're like these Italian cheesy crisps and they're so good. I think I have a pack in my cupboard, actually.
Oh, so nice. Yeah, it's the best touring through different countries and just kind of over time, you kind of get to know sort of your favorite snacks. Like one of mine is whenever I get to go into Scandinavia, which I love, such a gorgeous, gorgeous region. So whenever we cross the border to Denmark, the very, very first thing is I'll try to get to a Circle K rest up because they often have 3-for-2 offers on baked goods. and there's these Danish sort of cinnamon roll type baked goods called kandelsnore. Mm-hmm. Sorry for messing up the Danish pronunciation.
That's okay.
But either way, they are so good. And so that is the very first thing I'll try to do when I come across the Danish border. And then once I get into Sweden, I'll try to get proper like Swedish cinnamon rolls. And you just kind of need to know your way around. And that way you can always look forward to particular countries or regions to go to, and you always know which snack you're going to get. It's perfect.
For sure, 100%. You know what? You've reminded me when I've just kind of recently got back from Qatar over the World Cup period. We were out there for just over a month, and we got these, they do Haribo peaches, the sweets, and oh, they're so good. I've seen them once or twice over here because I think they do them as, obviously in Qatar, they're halal. And one of my sister's friends is Muslim, so he can't eat pork. And I bought him back some of these Haribos and he loved them. I've seen them in the UK as well, but I've seen them as kosher version, not halal. So they must be like a interchangeable kind of, thing like that. But they're so good. Delicious. They Wonderful. Taste just like peaches.
I'm going to eat some of these snacks after this conversation. Oh, my
Yeah,
word.
Do it. Amazing.
Anyways, I was wondering, is there any particular tools or software that you use to kind of keep track of all your tasks and projects? Because clearly, you know, as a freelancer, you do so many different jobs all over the place. I mean, I just got to take a wild guess that for your touring stuff, you've just got Master Tour. But... Yes.
I live, breathe, die by Master Tour, 100%.
Master Tour is the stuff of my dreams. And it is worth every single cent of the $65 subscription.
I was going to say, it's a little expensive. Like for people who are starting out, it can be. Mm-hmm. I was very fortunate in when I went out with Pet Shop Boys, the kind of production paid for my membership.
Great.
I had that for a while. Obviously, I'm not with them at the moment, so they're not paying for it anymore. But it was good to kind of have that opportunity to get to learn it and get to grips with the software.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can invite people for free. So all of my crew use it for free. They use the mobile version. You only really need a paid version if you are tour managing or doing something like that in production on a tour. If you're going in a different capacity, I would say you probably don't need the full paid version of Master Tour. But yeah, it's super helpful, really great just to have everything in one place. Mm. Everybody can have the app so they can view it at the same time as well. Yeah, I think it's super helpful. I'm a big Master Tour fan.
It's the best. I feel like I learn new details every single time I advance a tour through it. And there's so many functions and it's so well done. Plus, it gets updated all the time and it is wonderful. Just the other day, I... So I'm a bit of a nerd sometimes.
That's
avid
all good.
Listeners of the podcast will not be surprised.
Yeah.
But I'm a huge nerd just for logistics and for nice spreadsheets. I just love my job. I'm not ashamed to say that.
Yeah. Of course.
So the other day I sat with Master Tour for until 4 in the morning. Not a rare occurrence, dare I say, but either way, so I was getting so excited about, as I was due about getting my customizable day sheet templates ready, which I do for each tour specifically, depending on what the artist wants and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I have a template for show days and for off days and for travel days and for activities and everything. And
nice.
Oh my word, it's so fun to customize that all the way and then customize the advancing section and everything. And I sat with that hours and hours and hours and I was just having the best time. I felt like a little kid just putting things together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was a great time. But nice. I will say, you know, if you're listening and you're somebody that's just getting started and, you know, doing really small tours with sort of not too much on the line quite yet, or if you're an artist and you know, you're not in a budget region yet where you can afford crew, and you sort of have to wing it yourself. A really great free software that is still pretty new has come out of the UK, and it's called My Tourbook, and it's really, really nice. I've had a couple of artists sort of use it themselves when they would be out on tour just TMing themselves, and it's basically it's a really, really good tool if you just kind of want to plan out each day really well and have a good tool to sort of quickly just move different points in the day around and have a good way to print out day sheets and tour books and kind of track a couple of things. It also has a guest list tracking function and a couple of other really cool features. And similarly to Master Tour, you can invite other people in the tour in it, and it's completely free. It's obviously not even close to as advanced as Master Tour is, and there's no other software that comes even close to Master Tour. But My Tourbook, shout out. I think they're doing great work, and yeah, they seem like really good people, and it's fun to have software coming out of the UK. So yeah, that's a little recommendation right there.
Nice. I've not heard of that. I'll have to check it out for sure.
It's wonderful, yeah. And by the way, speaking of touring stuff, here's a really important question. Kind of nerdy as well. What is in your belly?
What's in my belly case? I have to tell the truth. I only very recently got a belly case. My lovely partner bought me one for Christmas. Yeah, exactly. Oh. You know what? Until this point, I didn't really need one that much. I just kind of put things in my rucksack, and that kind of worked fine. They're not super practical for everything. If you're doing a lot of flying or that kind of thing, because they're heavy and they're like extra baggage, it's not always, you know.
To be fair, if you get the like 1510 or whatever, like the one that's for TSA dimensions, that works. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, technically they don't ever actually fit the weight restrictions of carry-ons, but... Yeah. They are so perfectly well within the dimensions, and they're really slim that legit not I mean, actually one single time was it weighed. And
yeah, I've never had mine weighed. So,
but also like the, I don't know, 56 other times, insert random number, I never had an issue. So here's a word of warning: if you fly with Air Europa, they may very at Madrid Airport, they may very well check your ship. So, I kind of pleaded with the person though, because it's like, I'm the tour manager, and like, this is my lifeline. And you know, if this case gets lost, and it was last summer, it was that very summer where every luggage was getting lost everywhere. And I was just like, please, my printer is in there. Documents, everything I need is in this thing, all of my cables, all of everything that I need, please. And so she was like, look, it looks really slim, they're probably going to be fine at the gate, but be prepared that they may force check it in at the gate. And I was like, I'll take my chances. So, you know, I managed to talk my way through it, but
nice.
But you're right, like you gotta be aware that they're a bit heavy for carry-ons technically, but the dimensions fit at least. So
yeah, normally I would be putting mine on the truck or the bus, so they're more kind of suitable for that, I would say. But
yeah
you could probably fly with it and have no problem, but it's
I fly with it like all the time, so
yeah, there you go. So yeah, at the moment there's just foam in my belly case, but I will definitely be putting my printer in. I also got a new printer for Christmas, good, which is exciting. It's one of the like the mini ones that you can just kind of take with you. Sharpies are a must. I'm a big Sharpie fan. Normal pens. I normally carry a couple of notebooks with me just to scribble. Printer paper. Backup inks, because those little printers, even though they're great, they chew through ink like constantly.
Oh yeah, I've got my own little bag of just like printer things that I need. I always have at least, you know, one extra black and color, you know,
all the cables and stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that you actually need for a printer that you don't think about, but
yeah, 100%.
But still, printers are the most wonderful thing in the world. Like if you, if you're a tour manager and you haven't run through a venue, a green room, oh, even worse, the nightmare. Legit carrying this printer around and running around a customs office, hectically printing out whatever other list they suddenly want from you for whatever carne merch declaration you've got going on. If you haven't done that, you haven't lived.
Exactly. There you go. It's printers are definitely lifelines in our industry for sure. They can be a real pain, like when they don't work, they are super frustrating and super annoying, but when they do work and they work well, they are a big lifesaver. So yeah, always have all my printer bits, the extension cables, just because you never know where the plugs are going to be in the
printer paper
office. Yeah, printer paper. Some people like to have laminators, laminator paper. Normally I'll carry a bit of accreditation with me or stickies if we're doing that for the shows. And my head torch.
Oh, that's a really good one. Yeah, for stage, yeah.
Yeah, my head torch and my IEMs. But I'm a big fan of bum bags. I know it's really kind of uncool, but
fuck that. Who is even saying that? I swear they are so in fashion.
Well, people wear them like this, but I wear them just as a normal bum bag. But practical, you know? Super practical. And I love them.
Chances are the listener of this podcast is gay. Let's just put this out there. And if you are gay and you wear a bum bag, that screams even more gay. So there's nothing wrong with that.
There you go. Exactly. But yeah, I'm actually not gay, but I love a bum bag. So maybe that's
good.
Like
good for you.
Inclusive, you know? Hopefully.
Look, I allow that.
Love. Great.
Look, yeah, on tour, I actually wear not one but two fanny packs.
Oh, there you go then.
For the double gay, but also because reason for that is I've got one around my hip and that one is my private one for like a wallet and my keys and I got the biggest carabiner with all my keys.
Nice.
And I always have like two or three like N95 masks on the carabiner and sort of every like COVID thing that I need and for tour sometimes I'll like put other things on there, like I don't know, like dangle a Sharpie from it or whatever, like anything that I quickly need, I'll just have on the carabiner with me, you know.
Perfect.
And so I've got my wallet and my phone and whatever, and my private one, and then I've got sort of around the chest, I've got the second fanny pack, which is the work fanny pack. So, you know, if I'm handling, I don't know, if I need to run back and forth and carry some money on me, you know, I always prefer to have that on my person, you know, and whatever kind of like paperwork or something I need to carry with me in that moment. Plus I have a bunch of Sharpies in there as well, so I can just like grab them. So yeah, I like fanny packs are the best thing in the world, and they also make you look very professional, you know.
For sure. I always try and tell myself, you know, I'm not here to look cool. I'm here to get the job done, be super practical. If that helps me, so be it.
I mean, more serious question though. You know, I feel like particularly as how do I say this? Let me phrase this with something I struggle with when I work on tour, and I just had that thought of what you were saying, like I'm not here to look cool but practical. There's a thing where I like to look cool and like feel good and like feel feminine or fierce or God beware slutty. Whatever my mood is for the day. Look, like it's fun to sort of express yourself, and particularly in a work environment where your whole job is to be everybody's people pleaser, and you don't really ever get to sort of look after yourself much. Mm-hmm. And you don't really get to sort of express yourself much in a way. Plus you have that stark contrast. You work with the artists and they're the ones to fancy up every night for the stage, and you're the one in, like, you know, your black clothes and the hoodie and the whatever, and you're always a bit dirty, and you climb into a truck and you do the thing, and you got mm-hmm. your boots and whatever, nothing wrong with that. But sometimes you just want to feel yourself, is all I'm saying. And it's even stuff like can't really wear a dress because you got to carry stuff around, and can't really wear a skirt because of what if it's windy and you climb into the truck? I don't know. Like it's all of those things mm-hmm. that you just kind of need to think about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And it needs to be practical. And you also, as a woman, want to be taken seriously in your touring environment that is likely a bunch of men. So
yeah, 100%. That's really important for me, actually. I think I'm all for people, you know, being themselves and expressing themselves. But I also mm-hmm. think for me personally, like, it's very important for me to be taken seriously. And a lot of the time you'll have mistaken identity on tour, where somebody mm-hmm. will come up to you and say, oh, you know, are you the band's girlfriend, or what do you do? Well, or, you know, you must be the assistant.
That's not mistaken identity, that's just sexism.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's just a bad presumption, you know. But sadly, like, people do still have these biases. A lot of times people might come up to me and assume that I'm a musician or a backing mm-hmm. vocalist or something, just because of, you know, I'm a young woman, and they can't,
yeah,
they can't, you know, they don't realize, like, oh, you know, she could never be the tour manager because she's mm-hmm. a young woman. Like, that's yeah. just not what they think. It's like that. Have you seen that thing before where people ask this, like, riddle? It's about a doctor, and they're going, oh, I don't know how this could possibly be true, and the punchline mm-hmm. is, oh, the doctor is a woman. But nobody yeah. thinks, like, oh, you know, because you just assume a doctor is a man, but that's yes, not
exactly yeah
you know that's not
how that works
true.
yeah
like a guy can be a midwife, a woman can be a doctor. Like, it's just
surely
our perception of how and what kind of people fulfill those roles, and that mm-hmm. is changing more, but we're, like, nowhere near where we need to be for that. But mm-hmm. yeah, in terms of, I always think to myself when I'm dressing for a tour or a show, one, I think practicality. And a lot of the time that just happens to be black clothes, because mm-hmm. if you need to be on stage, you don't want to stand out. You want to just kind of blend to the background as much as possible. I like wearing black because, like, I don't have to worry about if it goes with anything.
Yes.
Which sounds crazy, but, like, I love color.
You're right.
I love yellow. Like, as you can see, it's a very happy
color. Oh, yeah, you're wearing a yellow sweater, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, as much as I love yellow, sometimes I will wear things, you know, I can wear black jeans and a yellow jumper, and that's fine. Mm. But with other colors, sometimes I'm like, oh, if I bring this is great. But, like, what does this go with? And I don't have time to worry about that in the morning. Mm-hmm. So if I'm like, right, black jeans, black t-shirt, like, black socks, black trainers, I'm good, you know, this goes, only if it's not, like, different shades of black. But that's a whole different conversation, you know. That's oof. But yeah, for me, the most important thing is, like you say, I would probably not wear, I say I wouldn't wear a dress or a skirt. I have, mm-hmm. you know, we were touring Europe in summer, like, it was super hot. So I did definitely wear a dress at some point, but I wore short, like, cycle shorts underneath.
That's what I do as well. Yeah. That's
so a perfect solution. So it's about, like, you can wear what you want, and especially, like, when the weather is warm or cold, like, you might need to adjust that appropriately. You mm-hmm. you don't want to be wearing jeans and a long sleeve top in the summer and sure. like 40 degree heat. But, like, I would always put, like, if I had a dress on or a skirt or something, I would put cycle shorts on, or I would just wear shorts. Again, I probably wouldn't wear something that was a bit dangerously short. Like, I would want to make sure I was well covered if I needed to pick things up, bend over, do whatever.
You just need to move around freely.
You're protected, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to be exposed. I don't want other people to look at me. I don't want you know, to feel awkward or embarrassed. I want to feel comfortable in the clothes that I'm wearing. I want to feel empowered to do my job. But yeah,
but you also get to feel a little bit hot sometime, you know?
Yeah.
Like everybody deserves that, and you want to feel nice. You want to feel yourself, and that's a part of it, you know?
Something that I definitely helps me with that is I love to get up in the morning and I will just put a little bit of makeup on.
Mm-hmm.
Like just a little bit of concealer, some mascara, and I feel like a whole different person, you know? And that's kind of what helps me feel a bit more like myself, not like a disgusting mess.
No, fair enough. Yeah. You know. Look, it makes you feel fierce and frankly, you know, as a woman in a very male dominated field, you know, you got to take all you can. You got to bring in all you can to sort of, you know, just get through the day sometimes,
yeah,
you know,
100%.
It's not always easy. And that being said, you know, obviously everybody can and should feel hot on tour and feel themselves. And that is not a woman thing by any means, but no, it's really fun to do that. And something I do is, you're right, like when you're TMing and you're running around the whole time or you have to load stuff, go on a truck, whatever, all the time. Yeah, dress is probably not the move, but especially not if it's like a white flowery dress or yellow or something, like flowy dress is probably not the thing that you want to go with. Also, because like something that I always worry about is the fabric could get stuck. Because that's a real thing. When you move between flight cases, they have all these handles and everything sticks out.
True.
And you walk around a venue and there's things stick out everywhere all the time. And you move through small spaces and whatever. Like you really don't want it to be ripped. But I always like to pick a really nice dress, and I'll know that I get to wear that on the off day. You know?
Yes.
And
that's
then
what
on
I was
going to
say.
Like,
you're
on
free,
the off day.
Yeah. To
exactly,
wear what you want on the off days. Yeah.
That way I look forward to the off day even more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You can dress how you want. You can go and do what you want. I would often like go and get a blowout like for my hair or get my nails done or something. Mm-hmm. You know, you can treat yourself on the off days. Like that's what PDs are for.
Go for a spur. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like one of my favorite days of all the summer touring was I was out with Bertie Strange and I managed to book us this wild, incredible Airbnb, traditional cobblestone cottage.
Gorgeous.
In the Peak District, just completely in the middle of nowhere, super far away from civilization, just in the middle of the mountains, really hard to get to. But we got there and you know, and it was just a perfect place for hiking. And, you know, I really just, and the band loved it and I loved it and people went for hikes and, you know, we hung out. It was a great time. And I really lived out my cottage girl fantasies and wore like this white flower dress, and, like went for a little hike and said hi to the cows and the sheep. And we had a wonderful time. Do you know what I mean? So you gotta be different people throughout a tour to make it through, I feel like, sometimes. And it's a bit like slightly more serious, you know, conversation part, but I think I kind of briefly said it before, but I feel like something I struggle with is, you know, being, especially in sort of managing parts or coordinating parts of a tour, essentially your job is to be, well, everybody's people pleaser. And you know, you ask everybody else how they're doing and you make sure that they've eaten and that they got everything they need, but like the higher up the food chain you get, nobody asks how you're doing, and that's really rough. And if it's a tour that where you don't get along with people very well or something, or it's stressful, genuinely can go to lengths where it feels really almost like depersonalizing, you know?
Definitely.
And it's definitely points that I found myself where I legit, you know, would have to remind myself that I'm a human that has qualities and belongs somewhere, and remind myself that this is just a job, that when I get home, people will be there and care about me. And they don't give a shit what tour that was. You know, they don't even care. And that tour seems like your whole world when you're in it, you know?
Yeah,
because it's so exciting, it's such a rush, but indeed it is not. And I feel like just little things like you know, like feeling fierce in the morning, or, you know, putting on a nice dress on the off day, all of those little things help so much to, like, be a human and sort of, you know, like, keep your own identity. And, you know, if nobody else helps to make you feel better, because it's your job to do that the other way around, then at least you got to make yourself feel good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. 100%.
Yeah. Anyways, with that little detour, I think a huge question for younger people getting into the career side of things, or, you know, business side of things in music, how do you find freelance work? I know it's the $1 million question for every freelancer out there, but I wanted to ask particularly you, because, you know, you work so many different jobs, so internationally as well. Like, frankly, you're so young and you've accomplished so much. And
thank you.
You've worked these random festivals in Bulgaria or whatever, doing random jobs. You do random stuff in Qatar. And
how do you know that?
You've got a link.
You did your research. Yeah, true. Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, you've got like 115 yeah. work experience on your LinkedIn. This number is true.
Sorry, I was not
because I looked it up. Between like 2016 and now, so it's fair to ask, how the hell are you so good at this? No, I mean, seriously though, particularly like all of these like random freelance jobs and stuff like that. Yeah, I guess how do you do that?
Yeah, I suppose it is the $1 million question. I feel like there's a very simple answer, but I never really enjoy telling people what the answer is, because it's like an answer, but it's not really an answer, you know. It's like not the answer that people want to hear anyway, I don't think. So the answer to that is simply that there's that saying, isn't there, like your net worth is your network. Or your network is your I said it right. I was like, is it the other way around? I said it to someone recently, and I'm pretty sure I said it the other way around. And I was like, no, that's not right. But yeah, it is so true. Like, I feel like I can say that and I can be honest about it, because I'm not one of those people who, you know, my uncle worked at Sony, or like my aunt was, you know, managed a festival, or I didn't have any like connections going into music at all. Like, I totally built from the ground up. So I feel like I can say that, but all of your work tends to come from connections and contacts, which you have to build yourself if you don't have any of those, you know, starting out. A very like minuscule part of my work sometimes came from me sort of going out and finding those roles and just kind of stumbling upon things. But that's like a very, very small part of it. Like, sometimes I would find a job on like a Facebook forum or a group or on LinkedIn. But to be honest, when I look at like the majority of my work, that makes up like such a small amount of it. I feel like in the early days, I volunteered a lot and I did a lot of work like at festivals and things, but through that was able to meet lots of other people who also worked at other festivals and who had been doing it longer for me than I had. And, you know, it was a case of once you kind of met some people and they liked you, they would say, oh, you're really good. You know, you should like do work with any other companies. And people would tell me about these other companies that they worked for. And in some cases, they would give me like an introduction, or I would just go and research the company myself and then send an email and say, hey, I worked with this person. They said that they worked with you guys. I want to do some of this stuff. Like, do you have anything going? Can I help? And then the more kind of experience that I built up, I was then able to go for paid roles, and the company that I started with took me on paid. And you just kind of grow and grow from that. It's just an expansion of that, really, because you are always meeting new people. People come and go. The more events that you do, or the more festivals you work at, it's kind of like the lottery in a way, you know, like the more tickets you buy to the lottery, the bigger the chance you have of winning the lottery. So it's kind of like, yeah, the more you put yourself out there, the more people you know, the bigger your network, the more likely you are to find work because you know more people who know people who are hiring, you know. It's all about that. But it's not as simple as, you know, you can just sit back and hopefully work will come to you. You have to go out and find it. You have to tap people up. You have to ask people without being too overbearing, because there's a bit of a line between like pestering people for work who don't have work to offer, but also kind of just hitting people up and saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for some work in these months. Just wondered if you had anything, you know, this is what I kind of specialize in or can do. Let me know if there's like a good fit for something, you know, and just kind of go from there. That's like what I would always say to everyone, because that's what I've done. I can only tell you what I know. And that's,
that's perfect. Yeah. I feel like this is great advice. And, I wish I had heard that advice earlier when I was getting started, you know, like I just for a little bit of background on me, like I very much got into music from being an artist first. And I very much did it from the very ground up. Like I started sort of playing in bands when I was like 15 years old, like just shitty punk bands. And when I tell you that I've played every single squat around Europe, UK, wherever, I've slept on every floor in every temperature without heating. I've been in every single van that fell apart, and I've seen and done it all. And I'm so serious about that. And I love it and I hate it, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, for sure. But either way,
But either way, like I realized pretty quick that there's never anything else that I want to do in my life than do shows and do the thing. And but at some point, I realized that as a musician, I wasn't going to get that far. And I had enough self-reflection to realize that I'm a passable musician when it comes to like guitar and bass and whatever. But I realized that I just don't have the discipline to like practice a bunch. And I'm good enough to like tour and do things, and I've done all sorts of tours, like playing instruments and whatever, you know. But I realized that I naturally gravitated towards just booking every single tour that my bands would ever go on. I would manage all my bands, I would tour manage the shit out of that, and just came naturally to me. And at some point, people were like, "Maya, you're kind of doing a good job here. Like, you're just bumbling around other weird jobs. Why do you not do this thing?" And I was like, "Yeah, why don't I?
Why not?"
And then I was like, "Okay, then I guess I'll do this now." And at that point, through touring so much already, but like in the musician seat, I knew so many people everywhere, and I'd already kind of randomly booked tours or like tour managed for other people, just like didn't put a name to it much, you know. And so I just put a name to it and came up with a company name and a mission, and then I just kind of did that, and I don't know, I just went from there.
There you go. Yeah.
I will say, amazing, though, the step from like that being a part-time thing and doing an art tour here and there to actually getting serious about it, that's tough. Like when you actually need to pay your rent with that every single month, that's fucking hard. Like,
yeah,
especially with obviously how the last years have been and everything. And I'm lucky enough that last year, you know, ended up being my strongest year yet, which I really didn't expect. The first year being out of lockdown, and this year hopefully will, you know, get even better. But you know, I'm not kidding when I say that I'm absolutely panicking about getting new work every single month. And every single time I finish a tour, I'm completely convinced nobody will hire me again until somebody hires me again.
Yeah, it's a tough cycle for sure. I think I totally agree. I think when I was at university, like I remember being on like my first tour, and we ended it early because that's when COVID happened, which was 2020, sort of March time for us in the UK. But yeah, I graduated during COVID. And at that point, like I'd kind of convinced myself that I wanted to be an artist manager. Like I wanted to work in corporate, maybe like a major label or something. And I did that. Like I worked in corporate for about a year kind of after I graduated, but it turns out like I just really didn't enjoy it. I didn't like the kind of environment. I bounced around like a couple of jobs because I was not in a good place mentally because of some of the people that I worked with, managers in particular, you know, and I constantly felt like I was being treated as, you know, lesser because I was a junior or an assistant or whatever. People didn't care that I had a degree. They were like, you know nothing, you need to earn your stripes. You know, they would make me do demoralizing things like clean up after people, wash the dishes, clean their desks. And I was like, I did not go to university like to do these kind of things. You know, I'm happy to make somebody a cup of tea like every now and again, you know, like I'm not above, I don't think I'm above everyone, but at the same time, I felt like they just kind of did it to be a dick. they did it to be demoralizing, you know?
Yeah.
It was just super shitty. And, you know, I just wasn't enjoying where I was at. And the reason it took me so long to go freelance, obviously COVID was a big factor in that, but also I was just kind of afraid that I was not, I don't know if not that I wasn't good enough, but that I was afraid to get rid of the safety blanket of like a guaranteed income every month.
Totally
I had bills to pay, rent, and I was just unsure. I knew that I could get work in the summer, but you know, coming out of COVID, I wasn't sure if that was going to be the same. I didn't know if we were going to go back into COVID. I didn't know what to do in the winter. I was like, I could get festival work over summer, but what about winter? Like, what do I do then? And luckily it all kind of, it worked out for me and I took the leap. And initially I was doing like management consultation. So I was kind of half sort of dipping my toes in the water. It wasn't like, it was kind of guaranteed every month. There was like a base that I was earning every month as a minimum.
And honestly, then that's a great thing. I absolutely do that. I absolutely do that still. Like, you know, I do arts management as well. Sort of to balance out the times when like the winter and stuff. But I can't and I don't want to take on every artist for management because when I go in for management on like a commission, I really put myself into it and I get very serious. And there's just very few artists who genuinely I think are ambitious and professional enough to, that sounds really wrong, but like to keep up with me. Depends on the level of the artist and stuff like that, obviously, but you know, I guess all I'm saying is when I go for a commission-based job, I really go all in and I expect the artist to do the same. So all I'm saying is like, not that many artists are actually willing to put the eggs in a basket. And that's fair. That's so fair, especially in this time, you know? So sort of like consultancy-based relationships are perfect. And I actually have a lot of them, you know, because they're great. It's sort of a flat fee every month. It's not too much responsibility for either side and you can be incredibly flexible. The artists can just like throw you whatever task they want and they can be in charge and they can just kind of do whatever and they can flexibly, you know, terminate with you and it's not a problem for anybody, you know, and it's great and you can flexibly schedule it in and whatever. So hell yeah, I always have like 5, 6, 7, 10 whatever consultancy artists that are just pick up a little bit, little bit of work here and there. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And that's kind of where I felt comfortable at that time. And then not too long after that, a couple months kind of into that, I had the call about Pet Shop Boys and was offered that, which was amazing. And, you know, very much changed my career trajectory. And it has been just since then, which has been amazing. And then obviously I went full time with live and touring and have had lots of success with that since. So I think it is, you have to at some point, you know, take the leap of faith, you know, really believe in yourself and just throw everything you have at it and just be sure that it was going to work. I do remember when I was about to go to university, I remember my parents really weren't convinced. I think I was quite academic when I was at school and I think they kind of hoped that I would go on and be like a doctor or a lawyer or something.
Sorry, mom.
Yes. So when I told them, I was like, I want to go and do music. It was music business. So it was businessy still, but you know, music at uni, and they were just kind of like, what? They were really confused by it. They're like, eh?
Like a good parent. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
It's a terrible industry.
You know, but yeah, I always remember this conversation I had with my mom, where she was kind of like, you know, we love you and we'll support you, but what's your plan B? Like, what if this music thing doesn't work out? I remember looking her like dead in the face and just being like, Mom, I've not got a plan B. And I was like, I don't have a plan B, because if I have a plan B, that means that I don't want plan A enough. I've already planned for failure if I've got a plan B, you know? And she was like,
that's commitment.
She didn't know what to say. She was like, okay, fine.
I like that. Yeah. You know, that's great.
You got to back yourself. You got to believe in yourself. And, you know, this is a really tough industry. And if you don't believe in yourself, you know, how are you going to convince other people to do the same?
Yeah. And you need to be ready to do like bullshit jobs in the middle. Like, I've done 100%. So many random bullshit jobs to get through the winter or whatever. Like, definitely. The other day I went for an interview in a grocery store. What the hell? Like, terrible pay, terrible environment. I ended up not taking it because I was hoping they would give me the, like, whatever, like the stocking shelves department, like working there, and which is pretty much no different to tour logistics. And I don't mind whether I like load a truck at a grocery store at a tour. I really like, at least I get to sleep in my own bed. I kind of don't give a shit, you know, over the winter. But hell, they offered me the friggin' meat and like sort of meat over the counter kind of department, and cheese and everything. And I don't like, you know, even in the winter, even desperate for money, I wasn't desperate enough to do that. Like,
yeah, for sure.
There's a line,
mm-hmm.
but generally speaking, you need to be ready to do some bullshit jobs here and there. And
you just
got to work yourself through it. And that's, you know, the unfortunate reality that is self-employment.
That is it. Yeah, 100%. I have lots of friends who, you know, they do bar work every now and then, or they work at venues, or they do promotion, or, you know, all these kind of little bits on the side that you can just kind of pick up, you know, waitressing or bartending, you know, they're perfect for just being able to kind of pick up. And once you have those skills, you know, you have them for life. And, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, once you've made it, you've made it, and it's a super glamorous life all the time. And that's just not the case. It is a constant, you know, battle to find work and keep yourself kind of, you know, afloat with everything. You can't kind of let yourself get too cocky or just think that work's going to come to you, because it's not. You know, I've been super fortunate and managed to kind of get work from the initial tour that I did, and it's kind of rolled from there. But I can't sit and be complacent and just think, oh, you know, well, I'm doing this tour and I'm doing that tour, and that's fine for me for the year, because it's not, you know, you kind of,
it's not,
you have to keep that up, and
you got to do something every month, you know, pay your rent.
Sure.
I mean, you're going to want to be home at some point too, but in the end of the day, you need to do probably like, I don't know, at least 8-9 tours in a year to make ends meet, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it depends kind of totally what sort of tours you're doing, what kind of roles you're doing, and all of that. But, and it also, you know, depends on what you want to be earning, because, you know, it's very easy just to work yourself into the ground and take every single job, every single opportunity, and just have no, that's the other thing that I think people don't talk about, is that, you know, being freelance and having your own company is great. People think you can choose your hours and work whenever you want, but you actually probably end up working more than you would potentially at a 9-to-5 or an office
absolutely
job.
Work more.
Yeah, because
absolutely,
you know, it's not guaranteed. Your work's not guaranteed. So
get ready for 60-hour weeks right now.
You're
gonna do it. Oh yeah.
People think it's glamorous and great, but, and you know, parts of it definitely are. You know, that's why we do it. That's why we love it. But at the same time, like, that's not the whole story. People think you go on tour, you party the whole time, and you have an awesome time, and you get catered to, and you know, all of this fancy schmancy stuff, you stay in nice hotels, but it's not quite how it is. People say, I'm so jealous, you get to travel all the time. But I'm like, you don't realize, like, I'm going to Italy or France or wherever, but I'm not seeing the Eiffel Tower and, you know, eating delicious pizza on the beach. I'm inside a venue, a dark venue.
Running around, yeah.
Yeah, running around, you know, I'm not, you know, sightseeing around the city and having an amazing time. Like, I mean,
sometimes you are, to be fair.
Sometimes, like, yeah,
exactly
on days off
those kind of off. Yeah, the off days are exactly what kind of keeps you running in a way. Both the artist and sure. you, and it's great. If it's really an off day, that is not actually just driving, you know.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful time, and you know, sometimes, and especially if you're TMing, you know, you're in charge, so you can absolutely schedule a bunch of activities for crew yeah, and
for
artists,
sure.
and that's actually my favorite part of the TMing job, I think.
Yeah.
Like booking really nice accommodation mm-hmm. for the artists, like really nice Airbnbs or something for the artists, mm-hmm. and but also like yeah, doing little activities, and over time you kind of know your way around, and mm-hmm. you kind of know which places are nice and the beaches that are nice when you tour plays a lot, and you know I always have, you know, I've got my favorite Indian restaurant in Manchester in Piccadilly that I always nice. Take artists to every single time I come through.
What's it called? Tell me.
It's called, Bundobust.
Ah, okay.
It
I love a good Indian.
Incredible. It is so, so, so good. And mm-hmm. particularly for the kind of like veggie oriented touring people out
nice.
There. It's yeah. an all vegan Indian street food
nice.
Restaurant. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's right at Piccadilly. And it's just gorgeous. So I take artists there every single time, and and then whenever I come to, you know, whenever we do shows in Manchester and Sheffield, and sometimes there will be an off day, I make sure to take them hiking in the Peak District, and you know mm-hmm. when we go down to Wales I'll try to show them, you know, a cool national park, and when we go to Scotland I'll show them this, and mm-hmm. you know, your little beaches that you like to go to and stuff like that. And so I really, really enjoy scheduling really fun activities for yeah. the off days, and that's great, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, it's good to have time off in like a non-work setting to kind of hang out mm-hmm. with everyone and just get to know people and have some fun. Like, I think yeah. that's super important as well, for sure.
Yeah. Anyways, we're getting close to an hour, so mm-hmm. basically I'd like to wrap with one final question.
Awesome.
And thank you so much already for, you know, all the shared experience, and yeah, I feel like there's a lot of really good advice in this episode for people. I genuinely think so. And
awesome.
I guess, like, do you feel like listening to an episode like this would have helped you? Like, had you randomly listened to an episode like this at 17?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I think, you know, you're always kind of looking for, like, especially when you're at that young age, like, you have a lot of questions, and you feel mm. like a lot of the time people just aren't upfront and straight with you. Like, sometimes you just need somebody to be upfront and honest and give you a straight answer, because I think we think that young people can't handle the truth on certain matters, and I think that is just not true at all. You know, we need to give young people more credit, and we need to empower them to be independent and to be able to kind of, you know, explore and forge their own careers, but they need the tools and knowledge to be able to do that sometimes. So 100%.
That's incredible. Yeah. So last question, thinking back to your younger self, 17 years old, just getting started, mm-hmm. what's a key piece of advice? What would you say to that younger self?
Gosh, what would I say to myself? What would I say? I knew you were going to ask this, and I was like, oh no, like, I don't know what to say to this question.
Did you listen to past episodes? Oh, sneaky.
I was like, I should have, like
it.
Prepared more for this question. I think maybe I would have just said something along the lines of, maybe like two things. So one, don't compare yourself so much to other people, mm-hmm. because I think it's a really common thing that, you know, especially with social media, LinkedIn, you'll look at other people, and I'm so guilty of it now. Like, I do this all the time, and I will look at other people and I'll see that, oh, you know, so-and-so has just done this tour, or they've done that job. And it's a lot of like Yeah, you compare yourself to other people, and we often think that we are our jobs, and we link success and our worth to our jobs and how successful we are, and if we've got work on, and if we haven't, and it looks like it's going really well for somebody else, we get into this spiral of like, why is it not happening for me? Like, what am I doing wrong? You know, and it's very easy to kind of get into that mindset of, you know, everyone else is doing amazing. Like, why is it not happening for me? And what am I doing wrong? And why this, why that? But it's important just to realize that, you know, often I was looking at these people and feeling those things, but what I didn't realize is that, you know, everybody is different. It happens for people at different times. We all live on a different timeline, you know. Some people get married at 20. Some people never get married. Some people marry at 40. Like, there's no set age to do things. You know, you could do your first tour at 16. You could do your first tour at 25. Like, there's no age limit for things. And often when I look back, I see that certain things happened for a reason. And they, you know, they've led to certain things that at the time, you know, maybe I didn't get a job and I was absolutely devastated about it, but then something better came along. And now I can see in retrospect, I'm glad I didn't get that job, because instead I got this other thing, which has led to other stuff, you know? So I definitely say, don't be too hard on yourself. Like, don't constantly compare yourself to other people, because, you know, everyone's situation is different. Try and just focus on yourself and like what you're doing. And I'd also probably say, like, don't worry, because everything works out in the end, but like, just believe in yourself. Like, don't let what other people say play on your mind too much. Don't, you know, dwell on it. Don't let other people convince you that you're not good enough, because you definitely are. And everything works out in the end. Future Holly knows.
Hey, Holly, thank you so much for being on the time. That was really fun. And that's it for today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Awesome. Goodbye.
Thanks.